Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. After a little hiatus, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we are doing our promised, after lots of anticipation, the season one roundtable episode. And returning with us is my former co-host on this podcast, Adam.
Hello, everybody.
It's good to have you back, Hi. Man.
Yeah, it's warm and cozy. It's like going home again.
And originally, Mark, our ever-popular voicemail guy, who gives us such great feedback that we've practically dedicated an entire segment to him every episode. But seriously, Mark, thank you so much for all of, like, Ruthie, Adam, and I, thank you so much for just making our podcast that much better every episode. But unfortunately, Mark is sick tonight, so he couldn't join us. But I was able to get a replacement, and not just any old replacement, but Steve.
Hey, everybody. I love it. I'm proud to be Mark's replacement. He is actually the host of Panels to Pixels, and I'm just the co-host. I just kind of go along for the ride. So I'm glad to be here.
Oh, that's funny. Actually, that's even funnier because this was a different Mark. Yeah. But it's kind of funny. So Steve is the co-host of Panels to Pixels with Ruthie's replacement on the Walking Dead talkthrough, Mark Kirkman, no relation to Robert Kirkman. And of course, Ruthie replaced Adam on this podcast. It's all very Circle incestuous. Of life. Yeah.
Musical podcast chairs. Yep.
Yeah. But Steve, on very short notice, was able to come in. And thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I owe you, man.
Oh, I appreciate you thinking about me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we are going to cover, this is going to be very informal, like we did with our 1A roundtable, just basically covering season one and our thoughts about season two. So I'm going to start it off with a nice general question, and I'm going to go to Adam with the question. You can start this. So it's been a while. It's been about, what, 6 weeks since Star Trek Discovery ended. Mm-hmm. It's no longer fresh and new. It's, you know, you've had some time to get away from it. So what are your thoughts of this show in general at this point?
I think it's – production-wise, obviously, it's a gorgeous show. I finally got – I didn't realize exactly how poor my internet connection was at my last house, because seeing it in true high def, because I've got the streaming quality down finally, it's breathtaking. From the opening scene to the final shot, it was wonderful. But I think they've lost a little bit of equity in the transition to the quote modern era of television, in that it doesn't have to be completely episodic like original series or Next Generation, but in trying to do a little preparation for this show in particular, I was trying to think of episodes that stood out throughout the season, and there really weren't many for me because everything was just a chapter in a larger narrative and very little of it stood out on its own. Mm-hmm. Does anybody else feel like maybe the switch from episodic to serialized might have lost something in translation there?
Steve, what about you?
I totally agree. It really lost that. I'm the same way. I have to agree. As Adam was saying that, the more and more I thought about it, I can't think of a specific episode that I liked. I can think of overall my thoughts for this series, but I can't pull out a specific episode and say, oh, this one was really great or that one was really great. I think it did lose a little bit in going to a more serialized season rather than episodic. But that's one of those things that shows have tried to figure out. And some shows do it well and some shows don't. But that's something that TV is now trying to figure out, is what's more important. What do people like better? Do they like more specific kind of a story each week? Like if you watch NCIS, for the most part, it's a different story every week. Or do you like The Walking Dead or Star Trek Discovery, where it was more about the overall season? So, mm-hmm. So I like that you said that, because I don't think I would have brought it up, but yeah, I can't pinpoint a specific episode. I can talk about specific characters, but that's their overall arc through the entire season. So, yeah, I agree.
Ruthine, what about you?
Disagree.
Oh, okay.
I really, really, really enjoyed the shift from whatever you call it, serial to
episodic to serial.
Episodic to serial, whatever. I liked it. I like one big huge story. A lot of other TV that I watch is like that. I don't mind the fact that the older shows are basically hit the reset button every week. I mean, that was fine. I liked that too, but I also enjoyed this a lot. And I can think of an episode that I really liked that stood out to me. And that was the basically the Groundhog Day episode, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad or whatever. I loved that episode. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
So
I agree with Ruthie. So we're split. And I would also, in fact, I watched that episode and the episode before it, Lethe, which was also fairly episodic in origin. So those would be two examples of it. But I mean, after episode 13, my take on it was I was just on such a high, and I've watched that darn episode so many darn times I can't even tell you. But the final one in the mirror universe, you know,
past his prologue,
right? When we finally, you know, after we had finally found out the true identity of Lorca. Yeah. That episode, I bet you, I think I've watched it something like 14 times. I just have a little problem. but anyway, like coming out of that episode before the last two, I was like, oh my God, this is the best show I've ever seen. I've come down from that at this point, but I will say that it's probably my favorite show that's on TV right now. It's far gone past The Walking Dead at this point. And, you know, Game of Thrones is there as well, but I have to put Star Trek Discovery ahead of that. Now it kind of, especially I think the last episode, it actually showed some of those warts from the first couple of episodes in the show. Not as strong, but, you know, I like what I saw at the very end of it. And I like, this, we'll talk about it in a few minutes, the, bonus scene that we got to see for, what we're going to see in the next season. So anyway, I loved it. I don't think it's perfect. I don't think any TV show really is perfect. And if you guys know of any, please let me know. I want to see it. You know, but I think, especially in terms of Star Trek, television shows. I think that this was probably the best, certainly in the modern era. You can also give high marks to the first original series season, but I think they did a great job. Not perfect job, but they did a really good job. So, all right. So moving on, we did that round table, in the first half, and, we didn't know, where things were going, and we ended up spending most of the second half of the season in the Mirror Universe. So what did you guys think of it? And I'm going to keep the order the same. Adam, we'll start with you. What did you think of all those, that trip into the Mirror Universe?
The Mirror Universe is always fun. I love when Star Trek just embraces the corniness of their own history. I mean, it was one of those things that worked in 1960s sci-fi that hasn't really aged that well, but it's just comfort food. You know what you're going to get. You know it's going to be cheesy. I've heard podcasts, they went on about those episodes, and they said, there's so many things that don't make any sense. There's no way the Empire would ever have flourished with the kind of characters they have and everyone backstabbing each other. And my response is, that's why it's fun.
Exactly.
You know it's all fantasy.
There's no way.
Like, yeah. Turn off your brain and have fun with it. And it's actually super enjoyable because it's the perfect, literally, mirror universe to the Federation, where instead of being all intellectual and high-moraled, they're kind of dim-witted and blockheaded and futile. It's so much fun to see everything about the Federation just turned on its head. So whether it makes sense or not, it makes for good TV at least.
Yes, it does. Steve, what'd you think?
I'm the same way. I love those episodes. You have to understand, I'm coming from a place of, I remember watching the original series on, obviously in reruns. I'm not quite that old to see them when they originally came out. And I remember the movies. I remember that, Next Generation, I stopped watching when they killed Denise Crosby off. Spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen TNG. When I was a teenager, I was a big Denise Crosby fan. And when they killed her, I stopped watching. My friends all kept watching and they kept telling me about it. And I was just like, yeah, I don't care. And then going into the future, I loved Voyager. I watched Voyager every week. I never really watched Deep Space Nine. So the whole Mirror Universe, exposure I had to it was the original series. So seeing it updated and in this modern era was really cool. And I liked seeing all the different things. I think one of my favorite moments was that when they went down to that planet where they encountered the Klingon Valk and, his name's escaping me now. The human guy they put his consciousness into.
Tyler.
Thank you.
Tyler.
When we saw that Tyler Valk, confrontation, I loved that, because it showed everything of what the Mirror Universe, can create. And I really wanted to see more of those kind of moments. I loved when they brought Janju, the dark Janju into this series. Mirror Georgiou into this universe. Georgiou. And the way that the crew reacted to her, to where you could tell, and the acting was so great.
Yeah.
That you could tell the people who didn't realize, that didn't know she was, and the people who did know she was. That I just thought it was amazing the way they did that. And so I loved that part of it. I loved that they didn't stick us the whole back half of the season in the dark universe, that they brought them to back to us so that we could see that interaction. Yeah. I loved them talking about Tilly and Killy. I thought that was a great, interaction there, and that chance to see that, the Tilly and Killy, kind of thing. I would have loved, I think Brian, I think you brought us up on a different podcast or earlier podcast. I would have loved to have seen some shows with that crew.
Oh yeah,
with that Dark Universe crew in our universe. Whereas I believe, and I could be wrong, as you can correct me. Didn't they talked about the fact that the Discovery got broken up or was destroyed at some point, and so they just thought everybody was dead, and so we don't get that opportunity to see that.
Yeah.
That side of it, which I would have liked it. That was my only problem with the Dark Universe storyline, was that they were so easily, it was so easy for them to change the ship, to change their uniforms, to change everything. They got all the information they needed kind of from that data module they found. And so they were able to change the whole ship. They changed their uniforms. They changed everything so they could match that Dark Universe. That was really the only problem I had with that part of the storyline. But other than that, I love that whole, the way that went. So,
well, upon a second viewing though, I think, it's actually a little comical, the whole, 'cause I thought that too upon first viewing was, boy, they're really just nailing this whole let's masquerade as the ISS Discovery. And then once you realize that Lorca came from that universe, no wonder he knew how to impersonate it so well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
I love when he busted out his Scottish brogue.
Yeah. Oh,
that was great.
So amazing. I was like, yes.
Yeah. I would love to see, a comic or a novel on the adventures of Captain Killy. I would definitely be reading that. And before I get to Ruthie's take on this, I want to give a toast to poor Lieutenant Yar, Tasha Yar, who for you, Steve, who of course you know was killed by a living oil slick. God, that was such a horrible death. All right.
You just have to understand 15, 16 year old me. I don't remember when it was that was, I mean, she was one of my, Denise Crosby was one of my first like movie star crushes. That may be horrible for me to say, but she was, and it just,
we won't judge you.
It was enough to make you go, I'm done.
They killed her off because she wanted to leave, though.
Well, I didn't know that back then. Come on.
Yeah, it's not like...
It completely changed my mind. I was like, oh, she wanted to leave? Well, screw her then.
Yeah.
I was just confused. First season of the show, and they're killing a character. I'm thinking, huh? I'm just supposed to be getting to know these people, and this person died?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys remember, but she died, and then the next week, she was back on. They played them out of sequence.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Remember that. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. She just died. Why is she there? And, you know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had this discussion with Mark a few weeks ago. That, and this may be something that's completely off topic for this podcast.
Nothing's off topic on this.
Does anyone remember the fact that in the 80s and 90s, and I really don't know when this shift occurred, maybe it was the mid 2000s, that TV shows started completing their broadcast recording before the show ever aired. I mean, I remember in the 90s reading articles about the X-Files, them record, shooting episodes the week of, literally the week, you know, days before the episode was supposed to be released on Sunday night. And that just doesn't happen anymore. They shoot an entire season and they have it in the can before the first episode ever airs.
Not all TV shows do that.
No.
Okay.
There are still some that do still shoot week to week. They don't shoot like days before it airs. They usually are a few weeks ahead, but there are still some TV shows.
Okay.
You can't do that when you have a 20 something episode season. You just can't.
Yeah, I was going to say the episodic shows, like, you know, mostly network shows at this point.
Well, any show that has 20 something episodes in a season, they shoot week to week.
Yeah.
There's no way they can't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember like when 24 first started, they were talking about the fact that those actors, they were shooting the week of that the episode was coming out. X-Files the same way. They were shooting the week that the episode was coming out. And now there's just not as many that I know of. Now I could be totally wrong. You know, maybe there's other ones that do that, but like, the ones that we hear the most about, the Walking Dead, this Star Trek Discovery, Fear the Walking Dead, all these shows are completely done. Supernatural, I'm a huge Supernatural fan, and you know, they're done. They've completed their season before it ever even starts.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's right for Supernatural. They have 20-something episodes a season. There's no way.
I can only say that because they were talking about the Scooby-Doo episode last year before the season ever started, and it literally just aired a few days ago. The Scooby-Doo.
Well, it may have been – in that case, that one may have been a special thing because didn't have animation in it?
Maybe they knew
it did, but it just – it's still
– Maybe they knew they were going to do it. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just telling you, there is no way that – their seasons are 23 episodes long.
Yeah.
There's no way they can shoot 23 episodes in advance of airing.
Maybe not completely in advance, but I definitely know they're getting most of them shot in advance because like I said, it just seems that that's happening.
I don't know. I got to disagree. I don't think that they do most of them in advance. There's no way. They just can't. They're 23 episodes in a season. They're only 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah. I think I agree with Ruthie. Like if it's a serialized show, then yes, Steve, I agree with you. But if it's episodic,
if it's like got 13 episodes or 16 episodes in a season, then they can do that more easily.
Right.
Also, especially if they don't air, if they're going from more than it, like any show that has more than a year between seasons, they definitely have them all in the can. Yeah. But shows that typically air between September and May, there's no way they can have all of those episodes shot beforehand.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you that. Yeah. And then you're probably right. Supernatural, that was probably a bad example. It's probably one that they probably actually do. Like I said, I just know that Scooby-Doo one literally.
They probably had the script.
Well, I know they did the voice. They did the voice stuff for it because that was the whole deal was that at a con, Jensen Ackles said they had just finished doing the voice stuff for the Scooby-Doo, or Jensen Ackles or Jared Padalecki, one of them said that Misha Collins was in that episode. And that was a huge thing that just blew up the internet because he had died. Yeah, he had died the season before and nobody knew that he was actually going to come back on the next season. So,
but that episode was animated.
Yeah. And so maybe it was
different,
and it doesn't
though.
Really fit. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Animation.
It doesn't really fit. Yeah. And if you take it, that particular episode, they could have put it anywhere in this particular season and it would have fit. So, you know, there may have been some theatrics in him saying that as well. It may not have been as much of a faux pas as what they made it out to be. It's just one of the things that I've been literally waiting the entire season since October for this episode to happen, and they just aired it this week. So,
all right, let's.
No, that's, sorry, we went off on
yeah. Let's on that.
You did say nothing was off topic, though.
I did, but I am going to also say
you're regretting that
what is
now.
This bizarre segue.
Inmates are running the asylum now, Brian. I'm sorry, you've lost control.
I've lost control.
It's interesting. You bring that up though, because this is a shift even within Star Trek. you know, the closest series that a lot of people parallel this Discovery to is Deep Space Nine because of the shift to the serialized format and the darker tone of the show overall. And yet that was back in the era of episodic, shoot it in a week kind of television. You know, they had 26 episodes per season, and the production value goes up, obviously, when you've got this tremendous lead time. But at the same time, there's something to be said about the artistry involved in cranking out a 44-minute show complete with special effects and everything in probably a 6-day turnaround, roughly. Mm-hmm. I remember watching some special features on Deep Space Nine, and they said that, you know, it was grueling because they would do 12 to 15-hour days for 4 days of shooting and then have to edit and composite and get it done in another 48 hours for airtime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same thing with X-Files back in the 90s.
Yep.
You heard a lot about that. X-Files, you know, coming to crunch time to where, like, on that, when that show was airing on Sunday nights, they were talking about, like, Friday or Saturday, they were doing final edits on it.
That's so crazy.
For a show that was going to
– So my question is, you get the older series of Star Trek where you get 26 episodes a season. I don't even recall. There might have been a mid-season break, but maybe for a week, not this, you know, 2-month hiatus or 3-month hiatus that we get with modern television. So would you rather have the lower production quality and higher volume of something like Next Generation or Deep Space Nine, where you get 26 episodes a season? Or would you rather them take more lead time and only produce 15 episodes, or, as we've already found out for season 2, 13 episodes for this higher production series that we've got?
Quality over quantity.
I agree.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I love the format of, even though we have to wait sometimes through, I mean, back in the day, and like you just brought up, you'd have to wait from like about Thanksgiving maybe until the middle of January. You had this hiatus, the 8-week hiatus sort of. I don't mind that. I like the quality, I think, over the quantity. I'm good with them having it all done and ready to go when the series starts.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times maybe not a lot, but sometimes at least, or okay, let me back up and start over. I think with Netflix becoming more and more popular and other various things like that, I think binging has affected how TV has been produced. In that people sort of, I mean, obviously you're like, the September to May TV shows are not necessarily going to be thinking about that, but other shows might be thinking about that. And so they kind of, I mean, I think it affects how they maybe do something, in that if you think of it as somebody's going to just sit down and plow through these, then maybe they're, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think that has affected how a series is produced anymore?
I think it does. And it's also worth saying that, you know, we don't think of it this way, but this show is a Netflix show around the world, you know, so there are a lot of people. And for that matter, there's a lot of people in the U.S. too, who are getting their, you know, trial of CBS All Access, and they are binging it now. So we got a new person on the Facebook group that was doing that just last week. We're telling us that they were just getting caught up. They hadn't even gotten to Ruthie's episodes yet, so they were still listening to Adam and me. But yeah, so that, I think that's worth saying, that I love the look of the show. It's absolutely beautiful. And I can't imagine if, you know, they were trying to do 26 of these like they used to, that they'd be able to do this kind of quality, you know? So we never really talked about it or got your answer. So I'm going to finally grab the reins and say, Ruthie, what did you think about the Mirror Universe?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I mean, yeah, some of it seemed a bit far-fetched, but on the whole, it was fun. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know what they say? They say that scared Kelpian makes for tough Kelpian.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, that look on Burnham's face when she realized what she was eating was priceless. Oh,
my goodness. Yeah.
I felt so bad for her. I was like, oh, she had no idea. She was picking somebody to die.
Oh, I know.
And I love that interaction on the bridge. In fact, I just watched it a little while ago because I didn't get to finish the whole last episode between Zhangzhu and her number one when she said something about that. And he said, yeah, we're real tough.
That was good.
Yeah, I love that interaction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unpalatable.
Unpalatable. Thank you. That's yeah. The word.
Yeah, that was good. All right. So doing a slightly more deeper dive, we can't talk about the Mirror Universe without talking about Lorca. So we spent, you know, from episode 3 until episode 13, episode 12, thinking that this guy was a Federation captain with a bit of some unusual methods. And I was just watching it today. Choose your pain. He leaves Mud behind. And I'm thinking to myself, Picard would never do that. You know, but looking back at that and now knowing that he is actually from the Mirror Universe and that whole story and how it went down, again, starting with Adam, what did you think of Lorca?
Well, the explanation for his actions makes a lot of sense, being that he's from the Mirror Universe. Even before that was confirmed, though, I thought it was so refreshing to see a captain with such a different take on things.
Yeah.
Like, I think they tried it with Sisko back in Deep Space Nine, especially at the outset, where he just had a monster chip on his shoulder and he was just angry. But Lorca seems more composed and calculating, whereas Sisko was just wounded and upset at the time. So to see a captain that doesn't follow typical Starfleet morals, but turns out to be highly effective because he sidesteps them, I thought was a great kind of rock in the flow of the river, so to speak, on typical Star Trek morals.
Yeah.
I loved watching him week to week. He was my personal highlight.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, what about you?
I'll be honest. I was caught completely off guard. Like I had read all the feedback. I heard all you guys talking about it. And I think on the Facebook group, some people had kind of hinted at, they thought Lorca was from the Mirror Universe. I was caught completely off guard. Like it was a total surprise to me. And I was glad for that at the same time. And the only thing that bugged me was the people who went back and they were trying to show, especially the things that we found out after the fact that identified him as being part of the Mirror Universe, like the whole eyesight thing, in some other instances where people were like, well, see, that proves that he was part of the, and I'm like, you didn't, at the time though, you didn't know that. At the time, I was cheering for this guy. This was the captain. I hate to say this was the captain that I was like, we've been waiting for this captain since, Picard. Cause you know, we wanted a captain who bucked the rules, who didn't necessarily do the Starfleet way every time, the Janeway kind of like I think Janeway had the best balance of sticking to Starfleet values, but still trying to get her crew home.
Yeah.
And for me, Lorca was the first one that I saw anyway, that kind of fit that same mold, that idea of I'm fighting a war and I'm going to win this war no matter what.
So that's true. But in the end,
obviously, I ended up being completely wrong. He ended up being totally crazy, completely fixated on Burnham for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
whether he had a romantic, whether it was a romantic thing or whether it was a father-daughter thing. I never really got at the end there what, because it seemed to me that his whole point of wanting to get back to the Mirror Universe was not to get home. It was to get the Burnham that he wanted. I don't know. I really was confused about his character at the end. Now, I loved his character all the way up to that point where we saw the cracks and we started to see him. We saw, and Jason Isaacs played it amazing, in my opinion.
He sure did.
That you saw the cracks of that. This is a guy who his whole, he's like I said, he was fixated. What we found out, he was fixated the entire season on getting his Burnham back, even if he had to mold the whatever we're going to call her, Prime Burnham, into the Mirror Universe Burnham, or if he was going to actually get the Mirror Universe Burnham and bring her back, whatever it was, that was what his obsession was I've got to get this person. If I can get her, then everything else will work. And like I said, Jason Isaacs, in my opinion, just played it so very well to the point where he gets, you know, literally stabbed in the back. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth saying today. I think I said earlier that I watched Lethe, and that scene when he tells Tyler that, you know, if he doesn't come back with Burnham, don't bother coming back. That just plays completely different after you know what his true intentions is. And it feels kind of pervy.
Exactly. Like I said, I couldn't get it. Like I have a person in my circle who she's a female, but she's like of the age to where if I had a daughter, that's the daughter I would want to have.
Yeah.
And I told her that a few months back, and she just kind of, she took it very well. As I said, it's not a romantic thing. It's not a sexual thing. I don't want you to take it that way. I said, it's literally, I look at you as the daughter that I never had. So.
Yeah. But unfortunately in the case of Lorca, it became more of like a Woody Allen type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh gosh.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Don't please don't let me in there at all.
Yeah. Ruthie, what do you think about Lorca?
I mean, I thought he was great. He's just, I think we had a conversation about him, about why he was acting the way that he was acting and what were his motivations and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And I don't know. It makes more sense now that we know that he wasn't really, excuse me, gracious, that he wasn't really Prime Universe Lorca.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, the later it gets, the more that's going to happen. That's why I didn't want to start late.
You're an hour ahead of us, or no, rather behind us.
It doesn't matter.
Hey.
I get tired.
I'm going to offend the Okies. When it gets dark, we're ready to go to bed, okay? All right. When it starts to get dark, I'm ready to be home, have a drink in my hand, and go to bed, okay? Sorry.
I wake up early, all right? So.
Yeah.
And well, also, the later it gets, the more tired I am and the less coherent I am. I sound drunk.
I can attest to
that's
this.
That's the best Ruthie. That's my favorite Ruthie. Oh,
gosh. It is not pretty.
Yeah.
Especially if I start slurring or something, like slurring my speech. It's not fun.
Mark on Walking Dead, not so much this week, but last week, at first I thought he was sleepy, but after listening to it while I was editing, I was like, were you a little more than sleepy? but yeah, anyway, as far as my concern, my thoughts on Lorca, I thought that Jason Isaacs was in many ways the best thing on the show. And, you know, I think he was good enough to get nominated for awards. You know, I doubt that Star Trek Discovery will ever get, you know, Emmy nominations, but doggone it. I mean, he was good enough that I think he deserves to be nominated. And I'm hoping somehow that they can incorporate the true Lorca, you know, this, you know, maybe he's not dead or something, in season two, but I doubt that's going to happen.
As much as I would love to see it, it would just be too, I'm not sure what the word is that I'm searching for.
Star Trek-y? Yeah,
just suddenly find, oh, wait, here's Prime Lorca.
Yeah.
He's been alive the whole time on this planet or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I would love, but I would love to see
escape
it.
Pod.
Yeah. And that's like what they risk from bringing back Culber too. You know, I mean, I love the relationship between Stamets and Culber, but can you bring him back? And if they bring him back, I mean, what does that mean? I mean, it just.
Well, they would have to bring him at the mirror one, though, right? Technically, well, they?
And if that's the case, you know, it's not like they were a couple before. So, you know, and if it's mirror Culber, he'll be some kind of evil, you know, so he won't be the same guy. So. But yeah, so anyway, I loved how he played it. I thought the writing, you know, when you look back at it, it was so subtle and yet everything was there. Like if you knew it was coming, it was there. You just didn't see it. And then once you knew it, it's like, oh my God.
Oh yeah. Down,
all down that to time.
The trophies that he had, even the ones that were just Easter eggs to what we don't know exactly how they were produced, but those trophies that he had in his ready room, you know, give us that appearance of a different kind of captain, not a true Starfleet captain. I'm with you. I think he did. If he knew from the beginning of the season, if he actually knew, hey, this is where your character is going to end up, then he played it really well.
Yeah.
Regardless, well, I guess I should say whether he knew or not, he played it really well.
I think he knew it, but just the duplicitousness of his character. I mean, because in many ways you would see him the way he would act and you would think, yes, you know, he is acting, you know, for the Federation to, you know, to win the war. But then you peel the onion back a layer and then you go, well, he didn't really want to go back to Pavo to solve it. What he really wanted to do was to do 133 jumps, you know. Yeah. I mean, that was his true objective there,
you know? I hated the fact that so many people picked up on that and I didn't. Like, there were so many people on the Facebook group and online that were just like, did anybody else catch that this happened? And I was like, I just kind of watched it. I didn't see that.
I mean, yeah.
I really felt like a dunce when I was reading all the stuff about all the, oh, he's obviously this.
And you know, that's the thing. I mean, I truly think that the writers, you know, the producers didn't expect, you know, that there's a huge segment of the Star Trek audience that goes through things frame by frame, you know, studies the episodes like the Zapruder tapes, you know, and it's not just a few of them either. It's like, you know, it's thousands of them that do this. And it's just, there's nothing that's going to get past it. And in this day and age, you know, with Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Reddit and, you know, all the various social media out there, news spreads and it spreads very quickly. Like the whole, and then getting to the next topic, which is Tyler/Vok. I mean, we suspected that, I brought up the fact that I was suspecting that he was Vok from the first episode that we saw Tyler, and you know, by the end of it, I wasn't pumping my chest up because, I was right. It was almost like I was ashamed that I was able to discover it so quickly. But, okay. So getting to that, Tyler is Vok is Tyler is Tyvok. So, Adam, what did you think of that whole progression of that character all the way through the season?
As much as I loved Lorca, that's as much as I was not hooked by that whole plot twist. I know it's one of the most pivotal things in the entire season, and for some reason, I never – in fact, most of the main points in the stories that you're supposed to be following intensely, it just failed to hook me. And this is a classic example of that. The whole – I thought it would have been far more interesting if they had not gone that route because, like you, many people called it very early on.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that well of a guarded secret, and I didn't find it that compelling.
Yeah.
Now, someone help me out, because I know I'm in the minority on this one. So what did I miss with this whole storyline that made it so interesting?
Oh, I don't know if it was necessarily interesting, and I think it was actually tarnished by the Klingons themselves. And going back and looking at it today, like looking at Laurel, I mean, Laurel was kind of like a cone head at a 45 degree angle. her head was so big, and I noticed it seemed to be the females had that really long head, and I saw one scene with Cole and Laurel, and Cole didn't have a head like that, so I don't know why they made the female Klingons like that, but anyway, they were so foreign that I honestly think that had something to do with a disinterest that you and a lot of other people had. And I think Ruthie also felt the same way, and she'll tell me right now if I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. I didn't like the new Klingon look.
No. But I just meant your disinterest in Tyler Vok.
The whole name thing kind of blew it for me too. I was like, oh.
Yeah, they didn't do a very good job of covering it up, you know. That would be my take. Steve, what did you think?
I'm with Adam. The same thing was I don't think I personally picked up on it, but so many people brought it out. And so many people were like talking about going to the IMDb page and saying this
or myself that, included.
And just so many. And to me, ultimately, it didn't really make any kind of difference to the story. Nothing for it to me. And maybe I'm wrong. You can correct me, but nothing really, his character in the story really didn't do anything to help matters or hurt matters. It just like he was kind of there, and it's kind of like Laurel kept like maybe you could make the argument that his presence propelled Laurel into the position that she was able to get at the end. But I think she would have been in that position even if she had just been captured. Like even without his presence, like there was just no, like he had not, like there was nothing he did that was pivotal except for trying to kill, except for his relationship with Burnham. And then, you know, again, maybe you could make a stretch to say that it showed us a little bit of her character development into the fact that like at the end there, I think the second or the third to the last episode, whenever they actually talked about it and she said, whenever I look into your eyes, all I see is him choking me. Like I don't see you. I don't see Tyler. I see me being choked by the man that I thought I was in love with. So in the way he affected Tyler, maybe I can see the character, but again, it just the character itself to me, and especially the fact that so many people figured it out so early. You go back to the very first first or second episode, whenever Laurel is talking to him and she says, you're going to have to sacrifice everything, or you're going to have to sacrifice so much in order to keep going in this. That apparently that people suddenly went, wait. And again, like I said, I didn't watch Deep Space Nine, so I didn't know about the whole Klingon Klingons being able to morph into human form.
Well, that actually that was actually from original series, like the Trouble with Tribbles. They had that one character, Arn Darvin. That was yeah. Mm-hmm. He was a secret Klingon. Hashtag secret Klingon.
I didn't realize that they had even back in the original series they had a way to physically alter their features enough.
Well, that was the excuse for why they didn't look that Klingon.
Yeah,
yeah.
Don't discuss it.
There was a whole.
Right.
I saw a whole thing a few months or a few weeks after the series started, and I can't remember where it was. And maybe if somebody can dig it up, there was someone had a whole article about explaining why they thought the Klingon appearance had changed. And they really went through, it was a really well-written article, and I wish I could remember where it came from, about going back to even the original series, when they went back and changed history, and the fact that things that were done by whether it was original series or TNG or Deep Space Nine that changed the timeline enough that would have not just necessarily affected humankind, but would have infected the entire universe. It was a really interesting article, but it brought up that fact about, you know, about why the Klingon appearance was different or could be different.
Yeah. Well, there's, it's funny. I posted on the Facebook group a link to a video of the Star Trek Discovery panel, which is on YouTube, and that was actually published by the Star Trek channel. And right in the panel, they explain one of the reasons, which I hadn't thought of, but it makes sense. One of the reasons why they were so foreign was to make it less obvious that Tyler was Vok. So they over make-upped the Klingons to disguise Tyler better, so that that you couldn't see the resemblance, like you would have, if he was Klingon from the 90s. Yeah. And when I heard that, I was like, oh yeah, I guess that sort of makes sense, but I don't like it, but I guess it makes sense. I don't know.
Well, and just like the whole fact they never had him actually go into Lorca's office where the Tribble was.
Yeah.
Which is what everybody kept talking about was, well, if he goes in to the room where the Tribble is and the Tribble goes crazy, then we'll know for sure that he's a Klingon. And my thought was, well, then they're never going to have him do that.
You know? It's probably because Lorca ate the Tribble. You know, that time he was eating that weird squid looking thing, which, you know, was maybe pseudo-kelpian, maybe was actual Tribble, who knows. But Giorgio, so let's move on to both versions of Giorgio, I guess. So but I'll start from the back. So so with Giorgio, we see a much different Emperor Giorgio compared to Captain Giorgio. So, Adam, what did you think of Emperor / Mirror Captain / Ruthless Giorgio? I don't know what else to call her.
as a character, I found her extremely compelling because I constantly wanted to know what the limits of her abilities were.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to be Empress without knowing a thing or two. So that part was really interesting. Now, in preparation for this show, I started rewatching the series from the first episode. And my takeaway from that was that they wrote the character very American and conversational, and it doesn't seem to be Michelle Yeoh's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Some of that dialogue was just – it was hard for her to pull off.
Yeah.
And I think she actually came into her own a lot more when she got to play the Emperor later in the season.
I totally agree with you 100%. Like, you know, when you see her say that sarcasm comment in the first episode, it's very wooden. It just doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't seem very genuine. But you see her saying things like, you know, scared Kelpian makes for tough Kelpian. And you know, that really works. Or when she's kicking Laurel all through the cell, you know, turning her into mincemeat practically. Mm-hmm. That is definitely her wheelhouse. No pun intended. Steve, what did you think of Georgiou, either iteration or Mirror versus Federation Georgiou?
You know, I was kind of in the same, similar to Adam, I guess, but even more so, I'll go on this tactic or this route of it, is that we didn't really get to know the Federation Georgiou that much. I mean, no. We saw her in the first episode. We saw her making that huge symbol in the sand that a lot of people tried to pick apart. As far as I don't care, it was cool. It was cool whether it was practical and it really could have happened in real life or not. I don't care, but it was pretty cool that she was able to trace out that with their footprints big enough for the starship to spot. To the point to her sending the video to Tyler, or to Burnham, excuse me, to Burnham. So we didn't get a lot of chance to see the Federation, Georgiou. And then I think it was you, Brian, that posted the Facebook group that you're like, I can't believe Michelle Yeoh was just used in these two episodes, that we're not going to see her again somewhere down the road. And then for her to materialize or to see her in the Mirror Universe was just like a celebration to me, because I loved that character, and it's very rich. She's got a lot she can do with it now that she's in the Prime Universe, especially. Yeah. And that whole interaction when Burnham saved her, because it almost was like, to me, when I watched it originally, I remember it almost felt like she was trying to sacrifice herself in a way. And so when Burnham saved her, she took that away. She took that kind of moment away from Georgiou, the chance to be a hero. She took it away from her. And so when she came into the Prime Universe, then she's now, well, okay, I'm going to be a bad guy. I'm going to go to the brothel and have sex while everybody else is doing whatever, that whole scene. And then I like that character, and I like I hope that we're going to see that delete again. We talked about the deleted scene a little bit, and we're going to talk about probably more in a bit. That idea of where the character is going to go from here, where this Mirror Universe Georgiou is going to be in the Prime Universe now, because she's like a lioness among, you know,
yeah,
dogs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm excited to see, and hopefully they can take that character somewhere and we can see her in the next season.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it. I really enjoyed, and it looked like she, as the actress, really enjoyed playing that part in the second half of the season. See, being able to play that kind of lioness among the dogs kind of thing.
And I tend to think that it was the Mirror Georgiou that made her take the part, because you know, that was, you know, scenery chewing type scenes, and I'm sure that she had a lot of fun playing them. Ruthie, what did you think about Georgia?
I mean, I really liked her. I love Michelle Yeoh, and I just thought she was amazing.
Short but sweet.
I'm not sure that I can't say that I necessarily liked Mirror over not Mirror, but I thought that the interactions between Michael and Mirror Georgiou were pretty cool.
So here's a question. Mirror Lorca or Mirror Georgiou? Which one do you prefer? Adam?
I'm Team Lorca all the way. Georgiou is fun, but Lorca, we got to know him so much more, and he was really effective and good at what he did, actually.
Yeah.
He did a really good job. I was sad to see him go, actually. I hope they find some way to bring the character back somehow in season two.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I said that already. Steve, what about you?
I think I like the fact that she's still alive. I like Georgiou more.
Georgiou,
thank you. I'm gonna butcher her name every time I try to say it. Michelle Yeoh, I'll say that way. Her character, I liked a lot better. I love Jason Isaacs, and I loved his portrayal of that character, but I think we're done with that. I mean, as much as I'd like to see more of it, I think we saw as much as we need to see of him. And as far as like Michelle Yeoh goes, I don't think we've seen, there's so much more she can do in the new, being in the Prime universe, I think. So I'm excited to see her. And as much as I love Jason Isaacs in the last season, I want to see more of this other character. So,
yeah, I don't know if I agree, but in this, like, Lorca versus Georgiou, but I completely agree with you wanting to see more of her. Ruthie, Lorca versus Georgiou from the Mirror Universe. Which one, if you had to pick a character, which one would you pick?
I'm not sure that I could choose.
That's a good answer.
Honestly, I don't know. I love them both.
Yeah. I would say that short-term Lorca, long-term Georgiou. Because I agree with Steve. I think the potential for that character is going. She at this point reminds me of Garak.
Oh yeah, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, don't you think so? Because Garak, I think, was so interesting on Deep Space Nine, and I see a lot of that potential for Georgiou. Just multifaceted, you know, somewhat evil, but also some good qualities too. And, you know, what they've set up for her, it seems, has a lot of potential there. So, but before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about the finale. Okay. So, we have, in addition to, you know, Georgiou saying, you know, see you later, we have the resolution of the Klingon War. And we skipped, okay. And before we get to that too much, we skipped a lot of the war. So, you know, we come back and they were, you know, moments away basically from winning, and they get back and, you know, they're losing badly. So, I mean, what did you think of that, Adam?
Yeah, I like the way that Steve was just laughing there, because yeah, we just for cost reasons and storytelling, we never really saw the war. We saw opening shots fired and the end. There's like 9 months of this huge, tremendous war going on, and we're sitting in the Mirror Universe watching one ship do its thing instead.
Yeah, we saw the initial battle. We saw, you know, Discovery coming to the rescue of the Gagarin in episode 8, and then not too much else until they get back. And
I thought we were in for something very different based on the first two episodes. That opening firefight, the battle at the binary stars, I thought we were going to see a lot of great Star Trek battles, the kind of stuff that makes your jaw drop. And they very cleverly wrote the story around having to show all of that stuff because it's very expensive. Yeah. So aces on them is on the showrunners for figuring out how to do that. But the Klingon War, I don't know if it so much ended as was abandoned. I thought that was far too quick and tidy to kind of wrap that up. I mean, anybody else feel like they got their money's worth on that storyline?
Nah, I don't. I don't, especially looking back at it. It's like, okay, just giving Laurel a bomb and that's enough to stop the war. It seems a little convenient, I guess. Steve, what do you think?
No, I'm totally with Adam on this. I miss, like, it was a complete disconnect for me that it didn't make any sense why, first off, because of what we know about the Klingons, why would no one would call her bluff, that somebody was going to call her bluff and just kill her?
Yeah.
right at the outset. It is not even just be like, okay, fine, boom, and you're dead. And if that causes the home world to blow up, then we just lost. But there's so much to me that didn't make sense about it and didn't fit with the Prime universe that we've known for so long. There's been this kind of, it's almost like I always equate it, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I kind of equate it to the whole North Korean thing, is that it's a ceasefire. It's not actually, like, the war is not actually over with North Korea. We're just on a ceasefire at this time. And that's why every once in a while things happen that kind of strain relationships. And we saw that in the original series, and we've seen that throughout, even in the movies when, I can't remember what movie it was where the planet was dying and they bring Kirk in to try to go, find a way to fix it. And he says, let them die. It's one of my favorite scenes. And it's horrible that I can't remember which movie it's from, but where he just looks straight at the tribunal and he says, well, let them die. And he's talking about the Klingons. And we just, like, that just, it didn't make any sense to me. There was a disconnect between this storyline and where we are in that kind of universe. And, so yeah, I had a lot of trouble with him just suddenly coming back and within a couple of episodes ending the war with this, just didn't even make sense to me as a simplistic reason, just as a thing of she's in charge now. Like, we've had no backstory of a female being over the Klingon Empire. You know, so what's going to happen in the next few years that would shift it from being her to being somebody else? Or it just, I had a big disconnect with it to where it kind of took me out of it in to some ways, at least with that part of the storyline. And I was really glad that we had a break from that whole Klingon storyline when we were in the Mirror Universe. You know, we had four or five episodes, whatever it was, where we didn't even deal with that. Like, whereas almost every episode, I think, leading up to the mid-season, there was some little scene about the Klingon thing that was going on that had nothing to do with our main story. And I'm just like, ugh, I don't even care. I don't want to read subtitles. like just so much that I just didn't care about with that storyline. And then the way they wrapped it up, it just didn't – it didn't ring well with me.
We were on a break. Yeah.
Okay, Ross.
That's what I was going for. But, you know, it's funny, Steve, when you were saying that, it reminded me of the Austin Power movies when, you know, Dr. Evil's got that, you know,
$1 million.
Yeah, yeah, but... Austin, you know, Dr. Evil's got, I forget the kid's name, but Seth Green. Yeah. Yeah, Scotty. And you know, Sky just says, you know, just shoot him.
Yeah.
No, but instead, you know, he's got to have the sharks with the laser beams, you know. Yeah. So, it's exactly that. It's like what you would expect is, especially those disruptors. I mean, they literally vaporize you. So, like, all it would take would be one Klingon, just shoot her across the way and done. And who knows?
I just can't believe that nobody did that. Like nobody, like it didn't even occur to anyone to just shoot her. Just not even like, or at least attack her or just frustrated me.
How many people do you think were watching it and saying, just shoot her? Yeah.
Who knows?
What do you think, Ruthie? About how the Klingon war got resolved.
Well, it was a little misleading, I suppose, because I don't know if this was just my interpretation or if they had told us that they were gonna it was gonna be all about the Klingon war, but it didn't really seem like it was all about the Klingon war.
Well, it seemed like it was all about Burnham.
But I guess Burnham. I guess they had just said that it was set in that time period, but yeah. I was probably expecting to maybe get a little bit more backstory about it, which didn't happen, and so that was kind of a little confusing, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I was really okay with it, because honestly, I'm still bitter about the change in the look of the Klingons, so every time they were on screen, it grated on me, so I was actually pleased that I didn't have to deal with it as much.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just say that I agree with you and say, if you want to hear me say anything more about that, listen to episodes 1 through 18. Because I don't think a single episode went by where we didn't criticize the Klingons in every way. And I still think that it was just a total, that's like my single critical thing about this show, that they should have left the Klingons alone. There was no problem with the Klingons as they existed. It should have never happened, you know, and make them look like the Klingons that we know from, you know, the last 30 years. Who cares if they don't have the ridges? Just retcon it. We don't care. I mean, they look stupid in the 60s. Just leave it as that. Who cares? So, instead,
that was my thing. The whole thing with like with Worf, with like that part of him, I didn't have a problem with that because, okay, we're updating makeup, we're updating, but it was still the same kind of basic general impression.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't completely change the way they looked, and it just didn't.
The Klingons of the 60s are more similar to the Klingons of Next Generation than the Klingons of Next Generation are to Discovery.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I'm fine with updating technology for modern sensibilities or whatever. That's fine. I see no reason to make that kind of a makeup change.
Yeah.
Because it just.
And they did nothing to the Vulcans. I mean, the Vulcans look like the Vulcans.
Yeah. Vulcans, you know, look the same.
The Andorians and the Tellarites look a little different, but it doesn't look radically different. And I would
not
say,
like, you look at it and you say, "Who? What is that?"
Yeah.
When you exactly. look at the Klingons and you go, wait, is this what? That's a wholly different, like a different alien species.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It might as well be, you know?
And, that was my main issue with it. It's like, I can't look at that and recognize what it is.
Yeah. I wanted to hit on that a little bit, actually. So how do you guys feel about the overall aesthetic of the show and trying to fit that into the larger Star Trek universe?
I didn't mind the
change to the holodeck technology. Like there was some complaint about when they were doing that whole holodeck episode, that people were like, well, how come we didn't see that in the original series? I'm okay with that kind of stuff. I'm okay with changing the look of the starships because obviously we're 50 years advanced in our technology as far as presenting those ships that it doesn't have to look like a model that I could put together in my bedroom. When I was a kid, you know, like when I was 12 years old and I was putting together the Star Trek Enterprise, model thing, you know, I was fine with it. And so I'm good with those kind of updates. They don't really bother me. And I know they bothered some people. I saw on the Facebook group, some people were like, they wanted to have it look like the nacelles look the same. And I'm okay with updating that. I'm okay with the fact that when they go into hyperspace or warp drive, the cells look like they, you know, just look different. I'm okay with those kind of changes. I'm okay with costume changes because again, I understand that the comm badges, okay, they didn't use a comm badge in the 60s because they didn't even have any consideration of that. But now we kind of have that and we can understand that technology. I guess that's what I'm looking at. If it's technology that we can understand being updated, it makes sense to me. But to change the actual look of an alien, a whole alien species is just a little, I don't know.
When said alien species has been well defined for 30 years, you know, and it's been relatively stable, and shown as such in a series, specifically Enterprise, that is 100 years before this, and they look like the Klingons that we saw from Next Gen and Voyager and Deep Space Nine. So, you know.
And some of the original series cast movies.
Exactly. And yeah, exactly. So, you know, that goes back to 1979. And, you know, so why change them? Why change them?
Well, it's hubris. I want to put my own stamp on it. And that's really what pisses me off about it.
Yeah. Well, it makes me upset that, you know, Brian Fuller, I don't know what the hell he was thinking. I don't know why he needed to change it. And, you know, in some ways, I'm glad he left, you know, because I think that was a dumb bonehead, no pun intended.
Oh, nice.
Decision.
It just hit me.
Everything I say has a purpose.
Sorry.
All right. So
why have the Klingons always been so hard to pin down a look, though? I mean, through the entire franchise history, they keep changing it. You had the original series look. You had the motion picture look. Then you had Star Trek II look. The Kelvinverse look is completely different. Why are Klingons the one species that they just can never settle on a look? They're out of ways to retcon it at this point. I don't know how you can possibly fit these all into one continuity.
Yeah. You know, it's like hairstyles. It changed a lot, you know, so maybe the Klingons are, you know, the hairstyles of Star Trek. They're the fashion statement. I don't know. Okay, so the Enterprise in the last, basically the last shot of the season finale, we get to see NCC-1701. And this is a good segue into thoughts about season two. So, first part of that question, what did you think of the Enterprise showing up? Second part being, how do you think that's going to play into season two? Adam?
Well, like my question as far as getting Discovery to match up with the rest of the series so far, I had no problems with the visual updates. If they had tried to make us believe that the ship we saw from the 1960s was somehow coexisting in this universe with the Discovery, it would have been a disaster.
Yes.
So I agree. I'm very glad that they did that. I'm curious to see how deep they're going to pull on this. They seem to really be loving their original series lore right now.
Yeah.
Have any of you read any of the books that they've put out so far?
No, I didn't know there were books put out about. Yeah.
Yeah, there's two so far, and I'm about halfway through the second one called Drastic Measures. And the main villain is a guy named Kodos. Does that ring Kodos a bell to anybody?
Kodos the Executioner.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And I didn't even know who that was because I'm not that versed in the original series. I was raised on Next Generation. And for them to write a whole book with the Discovery – not even the Discovery crew, Georgiou's part of it, but Lorca's just a commander on the outpost where the executioner takes place. I thought that was a pretty bold move. They seem to really be liking to go deep cut on some of the stuff that they're visiting. So
yeah.
I'm curious to see how far they're going to go into the original series lore when they actually have the Enterprise in there in season two.
Now, I know you read the first book. So is the second book better than the first book? You didn't really care for the first book too much.
Actually, I gotta say so far that I think the first book might have been better. It might just be I listened to them on Audible, so okay. It could be the performance, but it's very matter of fact. Like there's not a lot of intrigue going on. It reads more like a book report right now. At least the first one had good Star Trek-y kind of think your way through it puzzles and a lot of Spock and Burnham. So it was kind of interesting to get that backstory. Yeah. This one is more just, oh, it's so dry. So unbelievably dry.
I'm interested to see. I mean, I'll be honest. I loved, see, as soon as that 1-7, as soon as that was coming up on the screen, I was like, oh, we're going to see the Enterprise. Like, I was that guy. I was like, yes.
You know? So was I.
I was hoping that I was so excited to see that but then I jumped to, is it going to be Pike? Is it going to be Kirk? Is it going to be, you know, somebody else? Who is going to be the captain of this? And I almost really part of me wants them to just start the next season and not even acknowledge that happened. Like just go give the Discovery something completely separate for it to do. I would love to see or find out about the Burnham interaction with Spock, because obviously original series Spock and even in the movies and stuff, we never heard anything about a sibling or a part sibling, whatever she would be considered, step sibling, maybe. I don't know. We never heard anything about that. So as much as I'm interested to hear that, I kind of just want Discovery to go on its own kind of thing. I really would love for them in the second season to do an episodic, give us the original series. I never watched Enterprise, so I don't know if it was episodic or serialized, but you know, give us that kind of Star Trek. That's the Star Trek that I've been longing for, is that Star Trek where they go to a different planet every episode, to where something different happens every episode. We get to encounter a different race, that whole idea of, you know, seeking new worlds, finding new civilizations. I want that. That's what I want. Yeah. I want Voyager, but where it's in this universe, to where they can still interact with the main Starfleet. That's what I want. I don't need, as much as I would love, again, as much as I would love to see Spock, I would love to see Kirk, all those other kind of those interactions. I think I'd love even more to see Discovery go in a whole different direction, you know, be explorers again. Let's get that Star Trek back.
Yeah. Ruthie, I know that you had some concerns about seeing the Enterprise. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was cool, but then at the same time, I was kind of like, oh no, this could go wrong in so many different ways. And so, honestly, even though I was excited, it really filled me with trepidation. I was like, I just, what are the, tread lightly, people, yeah. Tread lightly.
Yeah, I I see where you're coming. And for the most part, I think I would agree with your assessment there, is that if they spend a whole bunch of time exploring the Enterprise, I think that's just going to take the focus away from
Discovery. Setting themselves up for pain.
Exactly. Because, you know, all it's going to be is the thought of what's going on in Enterprise. You know, where's Spock and how's he doing and when's Kirk going to come on and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And is Scotty there? All of that kind of stuff. And I think that the one – I will say this, though. If you haven't watched the panel from WonderCon that was last weekend, when we were recording this on Friday, March 30th, okay? So this was last weekend. They had the panel there. And there was one really interesting thing that the co-showrunner there, Aaron Harbert, said during that panel. He said, well, we know who's on the Enterprise, and we know about the Enterprise's uniforms and what they were wearing back in this era. So, okay. Like, so, I mean, what it sounds like is they're going to hit that right square in the nose, and they're going to address it. So if they do, I'm going to love that, because that's what I'm hoping they're going to do. I want to see them explain the uniforms and explain the differences. And for that matter, they don't have to explain the technology, I don't think. Just ignore it. Who cares? But because like you were saying earlier, I think it was you, Steve, that said it. Those are explainable. I mean, I don't want to see 1966 technology in 2018. I just don't, you know, I don't want to see this.
Imagine.
I like what you bring up, though, because it could be explainable very easily as far as a wartime mission versus a peacetime mission, was where you could put the Enterprise cast in like the gold shirts, the blue shirts, right, the red shirts, those different shirts as a peacetime kind of, oh, this is our peacetime uniform, to where we identify different crew members by what they do, by what shirt they're wearing, right, as opposed to the wartime uniform, which would have been what Discovery is in more of a wartime uniform, with that darker kind of, where you're identified by your comm badge or your whatever's on your lapel. That'd be an interesting, yeah, I think it'd be interesting to do, you know, maybe one episode with that kind of thing. The problem I think they would have then is, as they proceed, is Discovery then going to have to shift to the other uniforms because they're not in a wartime anymore? You know, that would be the thing, as whereas they could just show the Enterprise crew in the same type of uniforms that Discovery is in, and just not having – that's interesting that you say. I haven't watched that panel, so I may have to see if I can look it up and see that's going to be an interesting – that's the only thing I can think of, and this is coming from a military background, because I know we had – there was a period of time, I want to say, between 98, prior to 2001, where they had us wearing the job I was in was more of an office type of job. Uh-huh. And so they had us wearing our blues. I'm sorry. For those who don't know, I was in the Air Force, the United States Air Force, for 20 years. And so from about 97, 98 to prior to September 11th, there were periods of time where we wore our blues, which was kind of our office personnel uniform. And mm-hmm. we didn't wear our battle dress uniform. We didn't wear the BDUs, the camouflage that you see on TV. because we weren't in war. And then after September 11th, we shifted to what they called our wartime mission. And so we wore that camouflage uniform more often. And then there was a brief before Operation Iraqi Freedom started. There was a brief about 6 or 8 months where we went back to wearing our blues uniforms, and then we went back into that camouflage uniform for a while. So I could see that, if that's going to be their explanation of why the Enterprise crew is in one type of uniform and the Discovery crew is in a different type of uniform, that they're, it's a wartime and a peacetime kind of mission. So if that's what they're going to do, I guess I could kind of see it and I'd be okay with it. But at the same time, I wouldn't make any difference to me either way.
Yeah. Like I think it's easily explainable with a sentence. This is actually something I said on The Walking Dead this week. It was a similar kind of thing. It's like, all I have to do is just, you know, a well-placed sentence here by one character, doesn't matter who it is. And in this case, explain why the Enterprise has different uniforms, and then you're done. Even if it's a bad explanation, you know, it doesn't have to be a good explanation. What I want to see is, I was pumped to see the Enterprise, and I want to see how they explain Burnham and Spock. And obviously there's going to be some interaction between Spock and Sarek, who supposedly hadn't been in touch for years when we see them on, I think it's in season 2 of the original. So somehow that needs to be explained. And, but then again, you know, they don't have to go exhaustive. Just cover it and then move on. I don't want the show to be about the Enterprise. Now, I will say this. One thought that I had, and I will say, I did not come up with this idea. But when I heard it, I loved the idea. What if the captain that they're going to pick up is the number one from Pike's Enterprise? What if she is to be the captain of the Discovery? What do you guys think about that?
Huh, okay. That would be a great way to fill in the gap in the timeline.
Yeah, it would.
Explain the changeover in the Enterprise crew. And I mean, the interesting thing there would be to see who they cast in that role, given that Majel Barrett originally played it.
Yeah. I love the idea, but I'll throw it more open, and I'm not gonna go to all three of you. I'll just whoever wants to answer it. If not number one, then who should be captain of Discovery? Anybody have any ideas about that? Should it be Saru?
No. Okay. I like his character, but I think he's still got some growth. I think Discovery is at its strongest overall when it's kind of staying in its own lane. The more they try to connect it to the Trek we know, the harder it is to buy into it. So I think they should just keep telling their original stories, give little Easter eggs here and there. But I don't know. I have the hardest time swallowing it when I have to match it up to what I already know about Star Trek.
Yeah, I would love to see. And that was maybe the only positive, or the biggest thing that I took away from TNG before I started watching it that I really liked, was that idea of, we don't need to the captain doesn't need to be the one who goes down to the planet all the time. And that was always the biggest argument, or the biggest criticism of the original series, was you have the entire bridge crew, first, second, third in command, going down to the planet on an away mission. Whereas TNG kind of stopped that, and the captain kind of stayed back on the ship more. So I don't need to see somebody become the Captain Discovery who we know, who we're going to have to focus on. Let's stay with Saru. Let's give us Saru as the second command. Give us Burnham as the science officer who's able to go on these away missions, and we can see the story from her perspective. Kind of thing.
So you don't want to see away missions with the captain, Saru, Burnham, and maybe, you know, Ensign Expendable or Lieutenant Lifelock.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't need to see that. So we don't need to see, and whoever's captaining, and again, I don't know the timeline well enough, because isn't Discovery supposed to be about 10 years before the original series?
I think it's like at this point, maybe 8.5 years ahead.
Right. It could be Pike with Spock as his second in command, or it could be somebody completely different. But again, I'm with you, Brian. I don't want to see the Enterprise story. I don't need to see. We've seen the Enterprise story. They've told us the Enterprise story.
Yeah.
I want to see Discovery's story. Yeah. I want to see what they're going to do with that. I want to see. I want an explanation of why 100 years from now, Voyager, when they got in contact with the Federation, nobody gave them the specs
for this spore drive.
So they could just get from the Delta Quadrant back to the Alpha Quadrant in an instant. That's what I want to know. And I'm with you, Brian. It could be just a sentence. It could be just a very quick little thing of you said on a podcast earlier, they don't want to use a person. They don't want to abuse a person for this drive, and they don't want to abuse the tardigrades for this drive, so it's going to just get put by the wayside.
Well, for bringing that up, Steve, you win our showcase award. Congratulations, because that was the magic question. So, because we had completely sidestepped around the spore drive. And, I mean, they've explained that they won't put people in harm's way, and they won't do, eugenics experiments, but I mean, come on. they're going to use the damn spore drive at some point, you know?
Yeah. You got to give me something. Give me something that's more concrete. Give me something that's more concrete than, oh, we don't want to experiment on humans, and we don't want to experiment on the tardigrade, because even then, it's still one of those things where those are specs that, okay, for a one-time use, you could have sent it to Voyager, and told them, hey, just use this just for this one time, and don't ever use it again, because we don't want you to end up whatever. I don't know. That's bugging me a little bit, is because I was a huge Voyager fan.
Yeah. I mean, to completely go off a tangent, but this is a good tangent. I mean, Starfleet, 24th century, you had the ability to, send that information to Voyager.
And you blew it!
Exactly.
You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
Because that is the one thing that the spore drive and Voyager. I'm like, my God, they should have had the spore drive, So
this isn't the first time we've seen them not use a technology for purely moral reasons, though. I mean, they've had the cloaking device for, I don't know how long in the timeline, but they basically just agreed not to use it. There's one major advantage they just let the Klingons and Romulans have. The Pegasus in Next Generation kind of is like a spore drive in a way, but a kind of botched version of it. So clearly they've revisited it a little bit or adapted it in some way. I hope they pull on that thread.
Yeah.
I would love to see them pull on that thread and say that it's a derivative of the spore drive. I think that'd be a cool way to kind of retcon it and, just fit Discovery a little bit better in with the larger continuity.
Yeah.
You just hit the nail on the head. That's the whole problem with going back into the past, is everything you do is a retcon.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah.
And
boy, that word has been used a lot this week, right, Steve?
Oh my goodness. I know. I'm sure you guys said it, because I had that feedback on Walking Dead Talk Through, Brian's other podcast. I hate that word retcon. It just sends chills down my spine every time I hear it.
We talked all about that this week. Why?
Yes, why?
I just hate that writers can't figure out another way to do something to if they just why do you have to change what you've already established? That's what I hate about it. You've already established something.
It's not the word retcon. You don't like it when people retcon.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's okay. It's more. I don't like it when it's being done, when it's occurring. And so whenever the word is used, it means that something has just happened that the writers have instead of finding an intelligent way or a better way to change something, they're just going to ignore it. That's what bothers is that the whole idea of retcon is that you're just ignoring what you've done before.
Yeah.
And not,
so in other words, the Klingons.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you can replace retcon with Discovery Klingons that's the equivalent anymore. All right. Well, I want to start to wrap this up, but before we do, there's a lot of characters on the show that we haven't talked about much, and I don't want to like single out each of them, but I'll just mention Burnham. Of course, we haven't talked much about her, even though she's like the central character of the whole show. Tilly, who I think we all love her, don't we?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
She's amazing. Stamets, Saru, and any other, character that we haven't discussed, major or minor. Adam, any thoughts about any of those characters or any other characters that we haven't talked about?
It is amazing we got this far and haven't really talked in detail about Burnham.
I know.
She's supposed to be the focal point of the show. Who here feels like she's the most compelling character?
Oh no, not at all.
Yeah. I thought that was a big miss this season, was banking on this character to be the standout star. And I think she was overshadowed in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
As far as a supporting character, I think Saru is fascinating. I think the performance is great. The makeup is fantastic. And Doug Jones' performance is incredible too.
Yeah.
So he's my favorite. Anytime he gets moments, he's great to play off of other characters. And like I said, Lorca is still my favorite of the whole season, though.
Yeah. Steve?
I'm a Tilly fan. I'm going to say I've been a Tilly fan from the beginning. Some people were annoyed by her at the start and then became fans of her. I have ever since that line, the only woman I've heard with the name Michael is the
mutineer.
ever since I heard that line, I have loved her as a character.
Insert foot.
Yeah, exactly. I like that she's, I think Brian, you've said this or other people have said this, is that she is kind of the audience's perspective on some things.
Yeah.
And I love that about her. I love the arc that she took. I love that Georgiou at the end, she made that point of where Tilly was kind of saying, oh, I'm nothing like her. And Georgiou kind of said, oh no, I think you've got, I think there's some of her in you. Like she could see that Tilly has that fire and that spark. And I like that as a character. I like Burnham. I like, I know some people complained about Burnham, Sonequa Martin-Green's portrayal of her early on, that she seemed kind of stoic and almost like she wasn't emoting at all. And we got to see more emotion as the series progressed. But I think that was part of the character arc.
Yeah.
Is that she started out.
Completely agree with you. 100%.
Yeah, she started out as this character who like had to keep everything in check, who mutinied against her captain, the captain who she loved, who was, you know, basically a mentor to her, and she turned her back on that. And so I love that arc of that character.
Yeah.
but I, if I had to pick one in particular, I would go to the Tilly route because I've been,
yeah,
like I said, I've been a Tilly fan since the beginning, since that very first line of the, you know, the only Michael, the only female Michael I ever heard is the Mutineer. So yeah. That's for me.
Ruthie?
I love Tilly as well. She's probably my favorite.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Tilly. I'm right there with you, Steve. Right from the beginning, I loved that character. And the more that I saw of her, the more she was so good. Mary Wiseman has such a bright future ahead of her, whether it's in the show or if she, you know, becomes a big, big movie star. She's so good. And her timing, her comedic timing especially, is excellent. Mm-hmm. Impeccable.
Oh, yeah. And I said I'd talk a lot.
Yeah.
I want to see her play a dark character. I want to see, like, that's what I really, I want to see her play the Killy, the actual Killy part. Not her pretending to be Killy. I wanted to see her actually play that part, and I think that would have been really cool. It would have been a good stretch. So
that it would have been incredible to see that. That is the one thing that I would say about the Mirror Universe that I feel a little cheated on, because I really wanted to see what that discovery was like, and I wanted to see Killy, because Killy would have been amazing, and she would have been amazing in that role. But you know, unfortunately, we didn't see that, but and you nailed Burnham, I think, right on the head too, because I think Burnham didn't know how to be a person. You know, she knew how to be a Vulcan, but you know, like her actions at the start, and it wasn't just, you know, in the pilot, but like how she was trying to go around Saru when Saru was acting captain the first time. I mean, she was doing things that showed me that she really didn't know how to, like, be human. And I think it was over the course of the season that she really became human. And I think that's why she acted in the way that she did. I thought the character of Stamets was really interesting all the way through. And I love to see that transformation he had. And I love the Culber relationship. Saru was, I agree with Adam about Saru. Doug Jones was amazing. He's always good. I want to see more of those bridge characters in season two. And I'm really
the girl, the girl with the thing, with the eye thing, the 7 of 9 implant thing over her eye. Yeah.
I want to see her. I want to see that cyborg, you know, Arium or whatever her name is. Like, what's her deal? You know, so I'm hoping in season two, we're going to see more of those like secondary characters and, you know, kind of flush them out. Like we saw more of Detmer in the Mirror Universe than we ever did in the regular universe, you know?
Right.
And I want to see more of her. I want to see like why she got that 7 of 9 thing. What happened to her? You know, because it didn't look like it happened during the Battle of the Binary Stars. It must have happened after. So So anyway, that's what I'll say about that. So starting to wrap it up. Final thoughts about what's coming up in season two, and with that. We talked a little bit about this, but there was a bonus scene that was played, and it's not a deleted scene. There is a bonus scene. You can find it on YouTube. There's a link to it on the Facebook group, which, shows you a scene with Giorgio. Okay. If you don't want me to spoil it, I'm going to give you 3, 2, 1. Giorgio is met by an agent from Section 31 on Kronos. So, offered a way to shape the quadrant. So, you know, with that guy that's disguised as a Trill, which I thought was kind of cool too. So anyway, that's, if you haven't seen that, go watch it. I know, Ruthie, I just spoiled it for you, but then
I'll
again,
survive maybe, somehow.
You'll survive somehow. Yeah.
Just survive somehow.
Yeah.
You're hosting a podcast. It's your job to know these things.
Yeah. well, you know, it was only a few days ago. So, I mean, it's not like, it's been out that long. So anyway, thoughts about season two, Adam?
I honestly have no idea where they're going with this one. I think the Enterprise is going to be a cameo though. Like we discussed, you can't dwell on it too long. So, I'm interested to see where they go with it because most shows tend to, you know, broaden the scope as the series goes on. So since we had a nice tight focus on the Discovery and the ship itself this time around, I want to see more planets. I want to see more Star Trekking, you know, more exploration and more time for the characters to do some exploration instead of just having events drive the plot forward all the time.
Yeah. Steve?
Yeah, similarly, I'm interested. I'm probably more interested after seeing the bonus scene about this whole Section 31 thing because, you know, they gave that to us the first the first or second episode of the season, and we saw those black badges, and we never saw them again. Now we heard them say that whenever they would go to a spore jump, they would say whatever code black or something like that.
Black alert.
Thank you. Yeah. And so that kind of gave us the idea that maybe the spore drive is, associated with Section 31. So I kind of want to see more of that. But at the same time, I'm with Adam. I just want to see Star Trek. I want to see more of what we got in the original series, that five year mission. Some of what we had again in TNG, even though I didn't follow TNG because they killed off Denise Crosby. Rest in peace. Tasha Yar, all love to you.
Pour out a little liquor for my homies.
Yeah, exactly.
You must have loved it when she showed up on The Walking Dead.
Did
you lose your mind?
Static when I saw her, and then of course she didn't last very long, but that's okay. No, anyway,
she was too busy eating.
She died yeah. Again.
I loved anyway. So I want to
know, Denise Crosby made more appearances on Star Trek The Next Generation.
I know she came back a couple of times. They did an alternate universe thing where she came back, and a couple seasons later, I don't remember all the ones that she came back on. I just remember she got killed, and that's all I care about.
Did you ever go back and watch Next Gen?
No. I'm that bitter. I'm that bitter about it.
Okay. My goodness.
I know.
Right? I didn't I'll even watch know Voyager. Denise Crosby Somebody before needs Next some Gen.
Therapy.
I'll watch Voyager.
You know, that was 30 years ago now. You know that, right?
Hey, I can hold on to a grudge.
Apparently so.
Anyway, that's what I want to see. In second season of Star Trek Discovery, I want to see Denise Crosby. No, I want to see.
Oh, my God.
I want to see, like what Adam said, I want to see planets. I want to see more of that that science going on. Let's get that. Let's have that Star Trek back. So
yeah. Ruthie, what about you for season two? Any thoughts?
My sincerest desire is that they don't write themselves into a corner where they have no choice but to retcon. I will get really mad. I think they did a good job so far, but I think they just need to be careful and very clever, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I am very much looking forward to season two. The one thing that I hate about it is how long we're probably going to have to wait. I assume it's not going to come back until 2019. I think they start shooting in April, so maybe it'll come back in the fall. I don't know, but
See, this is what happens when you get them to shoot the entire run beforehand. You have to wait over a year.
Exactly.
It sucks.
Yeah. And, you know, they're supposed to be coming back with just 13 episodes this year, for season two. So either, you know, maybe they'll run all 13 together, or they'll do like they did this time. I'm kind of hoping they're going to play all 13, but we'll see. You know, I love the start of it. I said it already. You know, it's currently my favorite show on TV. I don't think it's perfect. I think it can be improved. You know, they could hire me as a writer. I'll help.
Especially now, right?
Well, hey, I saw the story once, you know, so it's not like I don't have credentials.
Exactly.
You know, so, but anyway, you know, so I think this has been a great season one. I really look forward to what they come up with. And I don't have any like big expectations, or, you know, if they don't do this, then I'm going to be disappointed. I just want them to tell good stories. And so far they have. They haven't done everything perfectly, but no show does. So just keep it up. And if they do that, I will be happy. One final question before we go. This is a quick one. CBS All Access. Did you cancel your membership, or do you still have it? And if you do, are you planning to cancel? Adam?
Mine's pretty simple. I only got it for Star Trek. So once I give it another watch through, I will be canceling until season two comes around.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Mine is just as simple, but the exact opposite. I had CBS All Access before Star Trek Discovery started, because I love the CBS. There's several CBS shows that I love, and I'm going to continue with my CBS All Access because of that, because I'm going to continue watching them, so I don't have to DVR them.
Mm. Ruthie?
No comment.
You're loving it that much, huh?
Yeah. And to that, I say that I was thinking very strongly that I would be keeping the subscription, or if I was to change my subscription, I would go, because I have been having it with the no commercial version, you know, to drop down to the commercial version to at least save some money. But my subscription ends on the 2nd. And it will be ending on the 2nd. So I'm getting through my watch, and you know, this weekend finishing that up, and then I won't have it, at least for a while, because since we last podcasted, I lost my job. So I know you guys already know that, but listeners may not. So
has there been any talk about if they're going to release it on disc, or are they going to do it Netflix? You know, Netflix does that a year or so out. They go ahead and release the discs.
I don't know. What I wanted to take a look at is what they did with The Good Fight, because The Good Fight is on now for season two. And I'm not sure what they did with season one. So, right, to see if that, because I imagine whatever they did for The Good Fight, they'll do for Star Trek Discovery. So,
okay.
And I will follow that up on a blog post for this episode. I didn't think of looking at that before we did this tonight. So anyway, Adam, thanks for coming back. Steve, thanks for doing this in short emergency call in. And of course, Ruthie, it's so good to be podcasting with you again on a show that we both love. It is. So, Adam, why don't you let people know how they can still listen to you in other forms?
Absolutely. I've got a Star Wars podcast, comes out every other week. We'll actually have an episode dropping Sunday, Ooh, Easter Sunday we're dropping. Okay. We really need to look at a calendar more for our release schedule, I guess. yeah, it's called the Nerf Herder Council. We can be found on Twitter at NHC Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. We've got a YouTube channel. Pretty much all the major podcast platforms and stuff. It's very much like this setup. It's just a few friends talking about Star Wars for about an hour and a half. And we just wrapped our episode talking about the special features of The Last Jedi and then played, of all things, Star Wars Family Feud. So it gets a little irreverent from time to time. But it's a good time. We try to, you know, at least sound like we know what we're talking about every once in a while.
Yeah, you got a really fun podcast to listen to. Definitely, if you guys haven't checked it out, definitely check out the Nerf Herder Council.
Thank you.
Steve?
I am co-host with Mark Kirkman on the Panels to Pixels podcast, which is we're trying to get it out. We're recording it consistently. I don't think it's dropping consistently necessarily, but it's out there. I think the first four episodes, you can find them on iTunes. Again, it's Panels to Pixels. We're also on Facebook as Panels to Pixels. We should have another episode coming out this week very soon. And right now we're doing The Punisher episode by episode every week. So we'll be wrapping that up next week. And then I believe, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, we're going to look at Jessica Jones, the first season of Jessica Jones. And we're going to do that kind of like another podcast that I follow, the Westworld cast. We're going to do two or three episodes at a time for the first season of Jessica Jones, and then we'll do the second season, that which just dropped on Netflix here recently. So
yeah. Ruthie, I know you've guested on a few podcasts lately, other than us. Anything that people can listen to?
Just one, really. I subbed in for Karen on the Timeless, or Remaking History, the Timeless podcast.
Oh, really? I've got to check that out. I love that show, Timeless. I'm sorry.
I love that show.
I just caught up, in fact, watching the last three episodes of this season. I just recently caught up on all of them. So I'm excited. I love that show. I will check that out for sure. What's it called again?
It's called Remaking History. It's a Timeless podcast. It's from Golden Spiral Media. You can find it by going to goldenspiralmedia.com. Slash Remaking History. I'm not 100% sure about that, though.
Yeah, but go to goldenspiralmedia.com and you'll find it there. You can also find
Beyond Westworld, which is an amazing podcast about Westworld, which is starting up in April. I'm not on it, but I love that show. And Troy and Aaron really do a great job.
Yeah. And yeah, it's an amazing podcast and an amazing show. When does that come back?
April 22nd.
April 22nd.
I know.
And I am, of course, doing the Walking Dead talk through Ruthie's former podcast with Steve's partner. So incestuous right now. And when Fear comes back, I will be doing those with Ruthie's childhood friend Kyle. So it's all together here. It's all very incestuous.
Are you going to do a supersized episode after April 15th when they have both?
Yes, we are planning a mega episode, and I don't want to like show my cards yet. But we have no. I will say that regardless of who is going to be on the plan, and because we don't know how that's going to work exactly, but we suspect that it's going to be a continuing story between the two. We're going to do a supersize, so it's going to be with Kyle, with Mark, and then we're going to have two other guests. That's the plan. We're going to do it roundtable style, and probably we may do two or even three episodes out of it. And I'll tell you more about it, Steve, after we stop recording. But I don't want to say too much more than that. I should mention that if you guys have any feedback about season one or what's coming up for season two, Ruthie and I will we'll probably cover that in our next podcast. We're going to start doing some original series episodes, selected ones, very soon. We'll talk about that later, Ruthie, which ones, but that's the plan. That's the plan anyway. But if you want to submit feedback, and I should mention, we've got some feedback already from Cyberman and Fred that we're going to hold. So we'll give that. And then anything else that comes in after tonight, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback and leave us text or audio there. Use the SpeakPipe widget that's there, or you can also call 304-837-2278, which is the Golden Spire Media voicemail. Make sure you mention Star Trek Discovery. There's also StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Most of our feedback comes through our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. And on Twitter, we're Star Trek GSM. So you can find us that way. And I should also thank Torchbearer, Son of None. Gee, I wonder who you were trying to emulate, for your wonderful, and I must say, wonderful 5-star review that you gave us on iTunes just after we finished our last episode. So thank you very much, Torchbearer, Son of None. With that, and I should also say that we're on the TV Time app. We are the official TV Time app, podcast for Star Trek Discovery. So you can find us on there and leave us feedback there on each episode. So that's it for tonight. Adam, Steve, Ruthie, thank you so much for doing this tonight. So I'm Brian.
I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Steve.
And I'm Adam.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.
And you guys can say anything else you would like. Like, you know, you will be assimilated. Resistance is futile.
I don't have anything. Sorry.
Yeah.
Your biological and technological
distinctiveness
will be added to our own.
Will be added to our own, yeah. You will be saved, maybe.
Oh, gosh.
Kapla!